Welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And today we have another, I hope, very interesting show dealing with metaphysics and science and spirituality and all kinds of other areas that I kind of push together and kind of make a show out of them sometimes. Today I'm going to talk about the creating of the spiritual middle way. Now, some people say, oh, isn't that Buddhist thing, you know, like, you kind of find the compromise or the middle way to do things or something like that, and you live your life in a balanced kind of thing. And, well, I've heard all those things, but that's not what I'm going to be talking about tonight. Although, because a lot of people think that way, then you may want to call it and just say, hey, I thought it was like this, or you might want to have some other ideas on it. So you can, and of course the numbers are on the screen where you're looking at, and you can just call us in. These are 800 lines, so you can reach us. If you're in Canada, it's a free call. If you're in the U.S., it's a free call. If you're not, for those, and I know there are listeners outside of those areas, well, then you gotta pay for it. Yeah, that's the way it works. Okay, so what the heck am I talking about if it isn't the things I just said it was that this spiritual middle way is about? And let me start with something that I think is going to surprise you. I like to do that sometimes. And that is that I'm really referring to not a compromise, and I'm not referring actually to some like, well, I'll just choose something that works for the majority of the people, a majority of myself, or majority of my way of serving. No, I'm talking about actually making significant and pretty severe sacrifices in ourselves so that we can serve others in the greatest way possible by achieving a number of virtues, which include the truth. The creation of truth. That's why you have to create this middle way, because you have to create the virtue of truth and a lot of other virtues all at the same time, if they're needed. And this creation of virtue is really the point. And you might say, well, what's that virtue business? Okay, virtue, just think of it as this. Virtue is like the thought of our Creator in some form. You can call it light, if you want. Light in form. And it makes things beautiful by our definition and our experience of it in an astral sense. You know, so when we experience something that way, then we can say, oh, wow, that's beautiful, wow. You know, so, and it doesn't have to be just visually beautiful. It's a beauty in many, many, a variety of ways. So creating the spiritual way has to do with creating virtue in your life, which requires significant, sometimes very high levels of sacrifice in order to achieve the results. You might say, well, what do you have to sacrifice? You know, I mean, why don't you just do it and that's it, no sacrifice. The sacrifice usually is in how others see and respond to us within our creations. It's not about so much us, because we're serving, you're doing this to serve others, but they may not appreciate it, and some of them may actually hate us in the process, or dislike us, so or have some other, we'll say, antagonistic, negative response to what we think is the creation of virtue, as it at least has some impact on them. And so this is the interesting thing. The creation of the spiritual middle way actually makes you kind of almost like the most non-politically correct person in some circumstances. And it will also lead to some people having a significant level of dislike, because this other way that you're going, which we'll talk about, is a way that most people don't. So nobody likes you, or very few people do. That's the interesting thing about it. So the real sacrifice, the one I see is the most significant, has to do with a severe lack of gratitude, appreciation, you name it, and sometimes downright dislike and hatred for pursuing this middle way. And you might say, well, then why do it? why not go along with one way or another way, but not this, whatever you're talking about, middle way. And the reason is the middle way is the co-creation of God's mind. And it has to do with where you're living, in the form that you presently are living in, which is the physical world for us right now, the co-creation of God's form here. And that's why we do it. We do it because we want to be, as much as we can be, a co-creator with the mind of God being everywhere around us in every way possible. Now, then the question has to be raised, why so much consternation and other problems about just trying to do creation of virtue? I mean, heck, that should be the simplest thing. Everybody should appreciate that, right? Well, if they're doing it, yeah, I would agree. Those who are co-participating, not necessarily directly, but, you know, they're doing something else maybe, but it's still creating more of their creator's mind, creating more beauty, creating more light and form, more virtue. If they're doing those things, that's terrific. But the numbers of people who are doing those things is relatively small at present on Earth, and it depends where you live, of course, but on an average. And so that makes it that slim pickings for who's going to be really appreciating all this creating the spiritual middle way. And for the rest of the world, they're going to be throwing rocks. They're going to be pretty upset because instead of creating more of a creator in the areas of existence that they live in right now, they are creating more things for and about themselves. They are creating more things that are not for others in service, but maybe for others in disservice, or at least a disregard for others. That's the problem. That's where we end up with this kind of contradiction, seemingly, that, well, I'm doing good. Why isn't it coming back as people saying, gee, it's so wonderful that you're doing so much good? And that's the problem. All right. So let's talk about more specifically what creating the middle way is about, because I'm sure I've gotten you, I hope I've gotten you kind of thinking, well, what is he really talking about? Okay, let's be more specific. The middle way in most circumstances is a way of doing something called, and I'm just going to name it, I'm not going to define it this way, I just want, for those of you who understand it, this will help you, but the rest of you may not. It's joining the pairs of opposites within our higher spiritual minds. Well, a lot of people say, well, that helped. What did he say? Yeah, that's for those of you who know what I'm talking about, that's wonderful. For the rest of you, I'll explain it in a totally different way. You don't even have to remember what I just said. Okay, so what we're talking about here is that human beings are plagued at the present time with using a non-spiritual part of their mental mind. The concepts they use are not spiritual concepts. They don't build consciousness. They tend to destroy consciousness. They tend to reduce consciousness, both in themselves and others when employed. And the reason for that is because they're non-inclusive, because they are exclusive in some way. Yes, they may belong to some group, political or otherwise, whatever it might be, and for all those who want to join them, they're inclusive. But for the rest of the people, they have exclusive thoughts, which are not only contradictory in some circumstances, but confrontive and conflictive to other people. And you can say, well, then every time you're being conflictive, are you not creating the spiritual middle way? Not exactly, but you'll get it in a minute. But that is a part of it. Sure, there are circumstances where that certainly is true. But let's get down to what I mean when I talk about concepts that are non-inclusive, that are separative, that are exclusive and push others away in their thoughts and in their actions. What I mean by that is this. The person is controlled by more of their astral nature than their mental nature in truth. They have a mental nature, but they don't try to find truth, and they don't try to open themselves to hearing or dealing with truth from others. Instead, they deal with their mental apparatus first by how they feel, and then they look for reasons to support their particular feelings. And even if the reasons don't make a lot of sense, they'll figure out some way to make it sound like it does, or to themselves at least, if not to others. And this is a pretty common problem that we have. And those people who are trying to create the spiritual middle way are trying to help those that are doing that problem to understand that they are and to make some changes, if they so choose, not in any forceful way, towards a more enlightened, truthful way of thinking. Not to see the same thing, not to necessarily even agree with what the one person's way of creating thought is, but to be open to hearing it and discussing it and trying to improve it, etc. These are the critical elements. And that's all called humility, by the way. And so one of the biggest things that blocks us is our astral nature, our emotionalism, which tends to run the way we ultimately conclude our thinking and form our concepts. Unfortunately, that gives us very unwhole concepts, sometimes no concepts at all, about why we're doing what we're doing, or why others are doing what they're doing, or why the world is the way it is. So we know very little about why anything is, when we are controlled by this emotionalism. Okay, so if someone were to then want to start creating the spiritual middle way, and they were human, I mean, there are different ways to deal with this. If you're outside the human kingdom, higher than the human kingdom, is actually a completely different method. But for us, for the human beings, this is the best way to do it. First of all, humility is a very important element. A quiet mind, one in which the listening of other people's ideas and thoughts is important. Understanding where other people are coming from is important. Empathy, and even a thing called super empathy, where you understand whether or not a person is functioning spiritually or they're really just focused on themselves. Those kinds of things are all extremely important tools to have. They don't come easily. They come through discipline. They come through creating within ourselves the correct senses and apparatus, including a brain, that is functioning together in a unity, so that accurate information is flowing through and emotions are not guiding our thoughts mentally. Very important thing to do. Okay, so if you want to create the spiritual way that is in the middle, you need to find answers to questions that generally seem to not have the kind of answers that most people find unpolarizing. So, in other words, there are answers, but it polarizes. It makes people focus in one specific direction over another, and those ways, almost by definition, can't be true. Because the truth has to support all examples conceptually. So, in other words, if I say this is a concept, this is the way this particular area of existence works, there can't be any exceptions, or it isn't the truth. It may be a partial truth. It may somewhat closely resemble what we might call truth, but it can't be the truth. And in order to be the truth, it has to work in any example that is placed before it without contradiction. And you might say, well, that's a very high level of definition for truth. Well, that is the definition for truth. But the weird thing about truth is, given enough time, truth eventually doesn't hold out. There's so many changes in the existence of our universe that as things change, you actually have to change the concept. Concepts don't run forever. They don't work forever because the universe is growing. God is growing. And because God is growing and the concepts are growing, then we have of course, a change in how truth is. Truth is one of those virtues that's wonderful, but it isn't forever. As a matter of fact, it may be very short-lived, because things can change in some areas fairly quickly. So finding the truth in any situation is an important element, but you can't hold on to it. You can't say, well, I know the truth forever, because things will change. And then we're right back where we started from. Okay, so the middle way gives us something that's very special. It gives us a concept that every example that we can think of will not contradict that concept. That's the middle way. Wow. So you didn't know that, probably. And you probably said, well, how come they don't say that in Buddhism? They kind of do, but it's hidden in other more mystical ways of talking, and so you can't kind of get to the point where you really understand. Yeah, that's because this is part of a Buddha's teaching, and it is, it makes a lot of sense, but, you know, it also became part of a religion, not just a teaching. And when codified in a religion, it could become a very big untruth in some circumstances, because like I told you, truths don't last forever. So if you come up with something that's kind of like, well, you do only this, that probably isn't going to work forever. That's why I said creating the spiritual middle way, not finding it, not having it given to you, not having it bestowed or born with or die with. It's creation. It must be created and usually appropriate for the time in service that you are providing at that moment. Mm-hmm. What are some examples? Okay, I'll give some examples, because I think that will always help clarify it. I'll refer to a textbook I wrote, and I gave some ideas of some things in there. I didn't say that this is the truth. I said this is one way to look at it, because, again, if it's in a textbook, over time, even if it were true when I wrote it, it could change. And I wrote that in the textbook. As a matter of fact, I wrote that in the preface of the textbook, so people understood what I was talking about. Yeah. Okay, so let's look at some examples. Today, a big issue for some people is the question of whether or not it's okay to have abortions. That's a big, I'm not starting off in no place, Bill. I'm starting off where people really have trouble, right? Okay, abortions. Well, there's at least one faction that believes that, that life, human life, begins at conception. That means when a sperm fertilizes, a human sperm fertilizes a human egg, you get a zygote, which is, you know, and that is, at that point, that is a viable human being. And then there's another faction that says, of course, the people who believe in choice, they call it, that that's nonsense. Because the egg is not capable of surviving on its own, and even if it were, it's just an egg, it's not a human being, it doesn't have. And of course, they fight back and forth, and one side says, but it has the potential to be human, the other side says, potential is one thing, but actual is another thing, and besides which, people have to be able to be given the choice to do what they want with their own bodies, and a woman has the right to say, hey, if I don't want that egg growing inside me, I don't have to have it growing inside me. Who are you to tell me it has to do that? Yeah, so this is the kind of thing that goes back and forth. And one of the points I brought up in this book, you know, many of you know the name of it, Life's Hidden Meaning, is we're not asking the right questions. We're not asking whether it's a human life. We need to really ask the question, what is a human life? And how do you define that? And what is the real factor behind whether you have an egg that's this old or that old that tells us something about that, so we can get closer to the truth? So basically, there's a huge misunderstanding. And the misunderstanding is due to a lack of both information, some of it difficult to understand, and also there's a lack of people being open to using whatever knowledge they have to apply it in an unbiased way to the situation. Let me give you some of the information. You come up with your own conclusions about this, by the way. I'm not going to tell you what the quote-unquote answer is, because I'm not sure I could at this point. But even if I can, let me give you some of the information. Okay. Based upon what I understand, now again, I could be wrong about this, so I'm just giving you some more information that may or may not be right. You'd have to figure this out for yourself by testing it, reading more, checking out, using it in past experiences, applying it to past experiences in life, maybe running some experiments in the future, that kind of thing. Okay, just so you understand. And here's what my understanding is about the situation. That egg doesn't mean anything. That's a bunch of physical matter. What matters is that there is a soul, a human soul, that is individual to what eventually the egg is going to become. And that soul has a purpose, and it has a reason for its existence. But we may not all understand or know what that existence and purpose is. You know, one could say, if you're a soul, if a person gets pregnant and has an egg, maybe it's okay that that egg not survive. A lot of them don't on their own. We know that. We call it miscarriages, right? So that's entirely possible that that's part of helping a person to develop, is to find the middle way. These problems that I'm bringing up help all of us to discover within ourselves the creation of more virtue. The problems are not meant to create terrible conflicts between people and for some people to go and shoot other people in the head or something. The problems are there ultimately for us to be able to discover God. And if we didn't have these problems, we may not be able to clearly do that. So they're not there by accident. They're there somewhat by design. Okay, so I gave you some information that there's a soul behind and deciding when the egg becomes an egg, and sometimes the egg doesn't get fertilized, sometimes it does, sometimes it aborts itself, sometimes it doesn't, and on and on. Sometimes it gets halfway through the process and it turns out dying, I mean, which would cause eventually an abortion of some sort. And so all these things happen. In addition, let me give you more information. The egg is only informed by the soul in stages, not like all at once, a little bit as it develops at certain points. Now, I'm not going to go through the whole thing because that would take the rest of the show just to explain how that works. And I know somebody's going to say, well, why don't you tell us? Well, you go buy the book, okay, or borrow it from somebody or something. Or call me if you really have to know. But it has a whole schedule of how it's going to inform the egg. And it has a history that it has worked out with hundreds of other souls as far as what it wants that egg to do. And it has a lot of those things. It also has to obey free choice of the individual, the woman who is pregnant. All of those, so in other words, it really will not, the soul will not interfere in almost every case, almost, there could be exceptions, almost every case with a woman's right to choose. The soul won't do it. Even though the soul has made plans in some circumstances. Of course, maybe its plan was to let this particular egg die. But in some circumstances, it may have had a whole lifetime planned out with other souls who are going to be, you know, they're going to have their incarnates, their eventual humans all interact together. And so it's going to screw up a lot of things. But the soul still chooses to give freedom to the woman. I'm just giving you information now. I'm not making any judgments at this point. Remember, there's a middle way. There isn't a one way or another way. There's a middle way. Okay, so that's the first thing we need to have kind of established. There's more to it than that, though. The soul also, as the fetus develops, gives the fetus the ability to eventually live outside the womb of the mother, even before it is born. However, if it does, it will cost that fetus a number of different issues. Its immunity system may be much less. It may have less of a brain development. It may have a lot of things that aren't fully operational, so it's at great cost. However, in some circumstances, it wants that to happen because it has some fetuses that are born prematurely, deliberately. That's all part of the process. Something to consider. Something to consider. And the woman still has the right to choose. She could possibly get rid of the fetus even after it could be viably alive under certain circumstances, maybe with technologies and stuff, and still choose that she wants to abort it. When I say the woman, this could be a mutually decided upon activity with her and her mate or whatever. I mean, it doesn't have to be just one person, but usually we think of it as an individual choice. Okay. All that information coming through right now? Okay, so what about what else? Well, how about this? That the fetus itself, after a certain point, has some level of will that it can invoke. A very small amount, but some level of will about whether it chooses to survive or not. But it has to be basically, and I'm going to give you some numbers, it has to be certainly past the first trimester. I can tell you that much. And a little bit past the first trimester for sure. That much I can tell you. And then after that, the fetus then has, its own will that it could enact to some extent. I don't know what it can do for sure other than kill itself. I mean, it could actually will itself to die. There's a possibility of that. Or create some other hardship, possibly in the womb for the mother or something. But at any rate, it has these different options after a certain point. Now you put all this together, and I want you to think about this and see if you can come up with a middle way, a spiritual middle way of how you deal with the question of abortion. And should you legislate it at all? Or should you educate? Because if the soul doesn't legislate, I mean, it doesn't enforce its own will for the most part, on preventing a woman from aborting. It can create its own abortion, but it doesn't create its will to do so. So it's a very interesting thing. And so from all this information, you can start garnering a lot more about what the middle way might be. In terms of at least educating people, at least helping people to understand more so they can come to a better understanding and maybe find a middle way for themselves. Remember, they have to create it. We can't create it for them. The only time we're concerned about what people are doing is when they're doing it in a way that directly affects some other being that has will. Now, I'll tell you that. And that gives you a clue. That gives you a clue that has their own free will. If you're interfering with the free will of someone else, then you have to be very careful because then at that point, you could be committing a crime against God. It's a possibility. Something to think about. We're out of time for this particular segment. Now we're going to go to a break. And when we come back, I'll tell you more. I'll give you more examples. Is this thought-provoking? I hope so. Hey, we'll be back in about 2 minutes from right now.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
Hun, what book are you reading? It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hon, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. M-A-C-F-L-O-U-E-R.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
We're back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Sorry for the little delay there. You know, one of the things about, I'm in a studio in Phoenix, Arizona, and we've got a station, you know, like in more northern California that is, you know, that's where all the engineering's taking place. And so they have to kind of coordinate things with me and vice versa, and it doesn't always coordinate, so once in a while, we end up with some dead air, which means that there's, I say, well, let's go to commercial. And the next thing we know, nothing for a while, maybe 30 seconds, whatever. And that can happen. It's live radio, folks. And live radio, you never know. You can never count on anything being the way you expected it to be. And even when I was in a station where there was an engineer right next to me, we had all kinds of crazy stuff go on for years. I mean, you wouldn't believe the stuff that happened, you know. And it's just the way it is, because that, you know, and I realized that for a lot of people, they're not used to live anymore. That, you know, almost a lot of shows, even radio shows, are pre-recorded. And so we don't realize that when you're doing something live, you don't get a second chance. That's it. Okay, something goofed up, it goofed. That's it. All right, so we'll try to create a spiritual middle way of improving live radio. How's that? We'll see if we can come up with the solution. Now, you can say, are you going to leave us hanging there? Yeah, I'm going to leave you hanging, because I'm giving you things to think about. And there is a way to create a spiritual middle way for every kind of conflicted idea you can think of. As a matter of fact, they're all called, again, these things called pairs of opposites. They're really illusions. The illusions are our inability to understand our own creator enough. And since we don't understand our own creator, and the soul is like almost like a junior partner to God, so it's like also not understanding our soul or souls, and that usually leads to tremendous misunderstandings. Really, a whole slew of misunderstandings, unfortunately. You've heard me talk about the general difference between, like, the two parties in the United States. We have a two major parties. We have a Democratic Party and we have a Republican Party. And one of them tends to emphasize more freedom, which is the Republican Party, and the other tends to emphasize more inclusiveness and givingness, which is, and somewhat consciousness, which is the Democratic Party. So you've got these two parties and they kind of see things. They see different parts of God, but they aren't able to see the whole picture. And so they have big schisms between themselves. Now, in today's world, there's also other kinds of parties and other kinds of things that are happening. And to some extent, some of the thought that has trickled in, we'll say, to politics, or has become more prevalent in politics in the last few years, has been radicalism. What is radicalism? Well, radicalism is where somebody is so convinced that their thought is right that they usually have adopted a fairly egotistical and in many cases even an arrogant attitude. They'll deny it, but that's where they really are. And so they think they're superior to other people in their thinking. They think that their answers are the right answers and there are no other answers. Well, obviously, they're not creating the spiritual middle way if they're doing that. And that sort of thing is happening, and it's happening at greater and greater levels. And this is a danger. There is a danger when you have people who have a complete lack of humility. And it happens to some extent on both sides, but right now it's happening more on one side than the other, and I'm not going to tell you which, but it is happening. And I want you to think about that, because that gives us a clue that one side is really getting more lost between what we call Republicans and Democrats. I don't really call them that anymore. I just think there's Republicans and Democrats who probably are normal, and they're not radical, and then there's a radicalization taking place. Radicalization is the danger. It's the greatest danger that you could possibly have in a political system, because it almost always leads to upheavals and sometimes to collapse. So very, very dangerous. And in a country like the United States, it could lead to some horrible kinds of things. So we need to be careful in understanding the difference between realizing that people may be creating something other than a spiritual middle way, but still they are trying to create something that is somewhat virtuous, and others who have lost their way completely, and they're creating something that, instead of being virtuous at all, is maybe trying to have only one concern, and maybe their own power and control over others, maybe the subservience of others, maybe the literally dictation and eventually tyranny of others. These are important elements, and we have to be careful that we understand this, because when I start talking about creating the middle spiritual way, I'm not talking about, like, getting people who, you know, are despots, trying to get them to become creating spiritual ways. Those people have to be considered in their own light, or lack thereof. Remember that. There's only a reasonable expectation of success in creating a spiritual middle way when someone has put into themselves and has demonstrated, not in their words but in their actions, a humility, an extreme humility, actually, because it takes a great deal. Now, humility means that you accept that you're oftentimes wrong, you're willing to admit mistakes publicly, and you're willing to listen to and even try and adopt some of the ideas of others without trying to become manipulative or tyrannical or whatever, just trying to do it because it's the right thing to do, because you want to see what is the best way, what is the way that really creates truth. And only one way will at any particular moment, although those moments may change things. So I want you to think about that as I go on and give some more understanding of creating the spiritual way and the spiritual middle way. When I'm talking about a middle way, the middle way has the most amount of strength in it. Once you find it, you'll know that you have it, because although others may dislike you for it, and they may even come after you and want to, you know, destroy you because they want power, they want control, they want to do certain things, ultimately, you become an expression of what your service is. And so you know it to be true because the service tells you that it's working. In other words, if you're serving others, then, and you can see in the others that the service that you're doing is helping them to understand, or help, whatever your service is. My service is teaching right now, but the point is, whatever your service is, if it seems to be helping others and they say, wow, that's really helpful, thank you very much, then those others, even if they're in the minority in comparison to everybody throwing rocks at you, tells you that you're on the right track, provided they are doing some of the same. Not that they are some kind of radical cousin, so to speak, and you're all in delusion. Because if everybody's radicalized, if everybody that you associate with is like yourself, you won't have any feedback then. But you also won't have truth. And you'll be able to determine that by the fact that those people that you're supposedly helping are not growing. You'll see that. Even if you can't see it in yourself, although you should be able to see that. Now, that's if you're open enough and humble enough in the first place to even get down this road. If you're really, really radically off, anything I'm saying will be irrelevant, right? Because you would never see it, you'd never understand it, and you'd say, I'm just a nutcase talking on the radio about some kind of spiritual stuff. Who cares? So, and that's okay. That's where some people may be. All right, so creating the spiritual middle way involves also the following important information. The concepts have to continually grow in size. This means that every time you address another, and it doesn't even have to be in a similar area of thought, every time you address another thought, if what you were doing before is correct, your concepts grow. And that means that more and more examples don't contradict what your concept is about. That's your test. You can grade yourself on it. As you see your concepts growing in size and accurately doing so without being contradicted by examples around you in the universe, you can say, gee, I must be finding the spiritual middle way. You see, nobody grades you on this. You grade yourself. And I'm giving you the measure of that grade. As your concepts grow, you know you're on the right way. You're going down that way. And you're doing it in a methodical way, too. Because I assume if you're following some of the ideas I'm giving you, which you may not be, but if you were, you would, could say, gee, this is kind of methodical. I can kind of measure whether or not this is really working. Because my concepts keep growing. And another way to know if your concepts grow is by what you read. Someone, I mentioned Lights and Meaning. Very, very difficult book to read. No kidding. I realize that. That's great for selling it, right? Okay. But I'm being straight with you about it. Very difficult. Some parts of it aren't so bad. Other parts are probably the most difficult book you'll ever read, period. Not because it has fancy big words in it, but because the concepts are so huge. Most people can't wrap their minds around it. They say, whoa, what did this guy just describe what guff is? Maybe he thinks he did, but I can't figure it out anyway. It's so big. Okay. But the point is that's what another measure. You can, because it's how you can understand the concept. A book that you couldn't fathom a year ago, but because of your spiritual service, and creating the spiritual middle way in the way you think about things and being humble with others and all the stuff we've talked about, you go back and read it, you say, how come I didn't understand this then? I understand this. I got it. Wow, I really got it. That's another measure, isn't it? It's the same thing. All you're doing is you're seeing how well you can think in larger and larger concepts. But in this case, you're being prompted by a book you're reading. Or whatever you're doing. Maybe it's a problem you're working on at work or maybe in an avocation. You're working on a problem you haven't been able to get very far because it's a very big, big consciousness kind of concept that you have to have greater in-depth understanding of than you presently possess. But maybe as you do your service, you go back to it a few months later and suddenly you got it. You say, that's it. And then you say, yeah, this thing's working for me. And, of course, you're not doing it to work for yourself. You're not trying to raise your consciousness. That's not the intended purpose. The intended purpose is to serve other people. Or it won't work, by the way. But if your motive is to serve other people, you, at the end of each service, you will notice this consciousness growing. And the ability to further serve grows with it. The ability to create more of the creator grows with it. Now, let's be more specific. I think I still have to explain a little bit more about the middle way because I gave you one example. Maybe not enough, right? Okay. Let's try something something else, maybe, I don't know if it would be as controversial, probably would be, yeah. This, again, you'll find in Lights and Meaning if you want to look it up. I talk about a very controversial subject, and that is the question of heterosexuality versus versus homosexuality. And what I explain in there are the following things. And, you know, some people are saying, oh, homosexual people are bad people. It's in the Bible. They should all be whatever they should be. And all this other stuff. And other people say, well, no, they're just like everybody else, and they're not bad people. And they should, you know, and they certainly should have all the rights that everybody else has, and this and that. So we have a very polarized society about that particular subject. Here's an interesting thing. Most people, the majority of people who are born homosexual, were homosexual in a lifetime before. And in each time that they were homosexual, in each lifetime, it was a choice that they made. Even though if they had been homosexual in a prior lifetime, that last lifetime may be affecting them if their soul chose to allow it to affect them in the next lifetime. Are you listening to me? Okay. A little complicated, right? It's not so simple, is it? Okay, so someone who's born homosexual, quote unquote, isn't really born homosexual because it's still a choice. But there's a propensity towards it if they were homosexual in a prior life. And some people, they weren't born homosexual in a prior lifetime. They just choose it anyway. And you say, oh, no, no, it's in your genes, isn't it? Well, I don't think so. Not in the real sense it's in your genes. Okay, so what is it then? What is going on? Well, it's like a lot of other things. Some people who are homosexual want to believe that it's something they're born with and they have no choice in it whatsoever because it's easier for them and they feel that it makes them more normal than to others than if they chose it. Because if they chose it, then they really made themselves that way. And they have to take greater responsibility for it. So that's the reason I think there's a propensity among some people in that respect. What's wrong with homosexuality? Well, it's very complicated, but you can't direct energy that helps another person to correctly understand their own identity, which is love, in the sexual act if you're homosexual. You just can't do it because you're reversing energies and spins. It's in the Lights and Meaning. You can read about it. But the important thing here is that it harms the people who are doing it, but it doesn't harm the rest of us. I mean, you know, is that going to cause everybody else to have a problem? It's going to cause maybe them to have a problem at some point. But it doesn't cause us to have a problem. Us being, if we're heterosexual. And if you're homosexual, it doesn't even affect you if some other homosexual is having homosexuality. So we've made this into something that is outside of the domain of affecting the free will of others in most circumstances, except for children. If you're going to start training children to be homosexuals or, you know, giving them an equivocation to one thing or another, I don't think that's appropriate. But for people who are mature adults, they have free will, this shouldn't even be an issue. But it is, unfortunately, for some people, because of some passages and, you know, some Bibles and some other things. Okay, so let me go through the middle way then. And again, I'm not going to give you any answers here. A little bit more information about what the soul does. The soul wants us to find God. And one way to find God is maybe to do something that isn't the way we were made by God, to find out that that doesn't work. And for some people, it may be homosexual. So homosexuality, because they are rebellious in certain ways, and that's one of their ways of rebelling. And so this is something to consider, because ultimately, there's even a rationale for this whole thing.
And the rationale isn't that God wants everybody to be homosexual, because if everybody was homosexual, there wouldn't be any more people. You know, we'd stop having more people. That wouldn't be a good idea. But it does affect child rearing and certain other things in some contextual way. But that's a different issue. What I'm trying to get at here is that if we're looking for creating the spiritual middle way, the spiritual middle way is that homosexual people should have the same rights that other people have in our society. They should have the same rights, the same responsibilities, and the same level of restrictions. No different. There shouldn't be anything that is done differently about them. However, they should be given, if they can accept it, information about what and how homosexuality is created inside them and what they can do if they want to change it and if they don't want to change it or can't change it. In some cases, they cannot. So that's an important point. Cannot. You go too far along that path, you cannot change it. But the point in that lifetime. And so the point is that all this needs to be better understood, because we have a lack of consciousness and we don't understand the concepts about sexuality in general, much less homosexuality and heterosexuality, which is complicated. I spent many pages trying to explain sexuality in this textbook. It's not easy. Go read it. You'll see. It's all, oh my God, this is like, I'm going to try to figure this thing out. This energy is going that way, this one's going that way, and then this center is affected. I mean, it's complicated. Look at, I didn't make the system. I just reported it, I think. But in any rate, so that's part of it. That is a major part of creating the spiritual middle way, is to educate ourselves in concepts, not about just information about little bits and pieces of stuff, but how the whole thing works and why. Once we get the whys, we can find better answers for solutions to whatever the problems are, without being in a battle with everybody else around us. We don't have to take a side and say, this is the way it's going to be. Okay, so I want you to think about all that. You know what? We're running somewhat out of time here, to say the least. So I just want you to, I wanted to mention to you, if you have a chance, I'm still using the ideal cell sorption resveratrol. I am. It really works. Works great on the dogs and the cats as well. ForeverYoungProducts.com. Go there and check it out. I'm telling you to try it out and see if it works for you. If you want to get a hold of me, thoughts@whylifeis.com by email, and go to agelesswisdom.com. That's the website of the spiritual group I'm a member of. Check it out. See if there's some things that you would like to be of some assistance with. See if you have anything, any talent, any abilities. We need help. We need help in so many different ways. And again, for some of you who have said, well, I contacted you, I talked to you, but you haven't gotten back to me. You know, we're going to. Matter of fact, this weekend we're trying to reach the people that have been calling in or sending us emails, et cetera. We've been so, so busy. I mean, there's been like a lot of major crises, actually, things that are not all that terrific going on, other things that we have to pay attention to. So please be aware of that. Well, anyway, we are out of time for right now. Until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.